Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati, joined by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Good evening, El Jefe. How are you?
Good evening, Nate. Doing all right. You know, kind of jonesing for some sporting soccer, but
yeah,
obviously pretty difficult reasons why that didn't happen this past weekend, so thoughts definitely down in Houston as well. But it's getting busy in the soccer world for sporting. Maybe a little bit of a break here, but then it's going to get super busy, so a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, despite the fact that we haven't had a game since the last time we sat here and did this show, we have a lot to talk about. First of all, Taylor Twellman will be joining us on the show. It's always awesome to talk just soccer in general with Taylor Twellman. He's got a ton of thoughts, as always, on the state of American soccer, whether that be at the club level, whether that be on the national team level. And lucky us, we can talk about both with him because it's a big international window for the United States men's national team as they will play at home against Costa Rica on Friday at Red Bull Arena. Which, according to Grant Wall, is the first time ever that the United States will play a meaningful match that's actually for something of importance in the New York metropolitan area. That's amazing to think about. They play a lot of games there, but never a real game of consequence.
You know, maybe that's due to 20 years ago, probably would have been like an away game in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
So it's a boost of confidence, and because they're confident that should be a pro USA crowd. I remember that they did the send off game before the World Cup, because I remember that big tifo that they did with the Statue of Liberty and holding the World Cup. That was pretty cool. So hopefully they can bring the noise on Friday, because it's a big one.
Yeah, it is, and there's a decent Costa Rican population in New York, but we expect it to be a pretty good home field crowd for Sporting Kansas City, or for the United States. And then they go to Honduras on Tuesday at 4:30, a week from today, and they play at Honduras, and then Sporting Kansas City are in action in New York City, of all places, right after that. So we'll talk about all that with Taylor Twellman, but we'll also talk about the final legs of MLS 2017.
Yeah, home stretch.
Coming down the home stretch here, 9 games for Sporting, less games for some other teams now. Sporting Kansas City have been the team that was looking back at other teams who had games in hand, and now all of a sudden Sporting is the team with games in hand because of this situation with the Houston Dynamo and Hurricane Harvey that has caused so many cancellations of many things. But the Sporting versus Houston game might have been the first one of all the Sporting events that had to be canceled down there. But we'll talk with Taylor about all that. We'll break it down ourselves as well. Another thing we'll get to in the show today is the news about Gianluca Busio, the 15-year-old who was signed to a Sporting Kansas City professional contract last week. We'll play some comments from Peter Vermees, from John Perry, the academy director, and from the 15-year-old Busio himself, because that's a pretty major development in the continuing evolution of the sport in the United States and of Sporting Kansas City more specifically. And we'll ask Taylor Twellman about that as well. But let's start with where Sporting Kansas City are, and that is still here in Kansas City. They were supposed to play at the Houston Dynamo on Saturday. The game, of course, was canceled that was right about the time that the hurricane was starting to hit south of Houston, and they knew that Houston was in the path. The rain was starting to come, and now we realize what a complete disaster this has been, a record amount of rainfall. I read earlier today, enough rain to fill the Lake of the Ozarks twice has come down upon the city of Houston. Everybody's seen the pictures. We all know about it now. And so that game will be made up on October 11th. So Sporting Kansas City played an inter-squad game, which I went to on Saturday because I was like you. I was just jonesing for some soccer. Took the sun out there, watched that for a little bit. They played 30-minute halves, by the way, if you're interested.
Okay.
And Busio played in that inter-squad game. A lot of Swope Park Rangers were out of town, so it was a lot of guys that didn't make the trip, things like that that were involved as bodies in the field. But everybody else played. And so now when we look at the Western Conference standings, and Carter, I thought that basically, and there were also, by the way, a lot of midweek games last week
as
well.
Yeah, there was a big Western Conference week.
Yeah, and Sporting just sat there and watched all. But I thought that, and by and large, the results went the way of Sporting Kansas City.
A lot of draws, which is pretty good
at this stage. That put Sporting Kansas City right back in the mix. In fact, when you look at the standings now, yes, they are third on points, but if you look at points per game, they are leading the Western Conference at 1.6 points per game. Seattle Sounders are on 42 points at the top of the standings, but now they've played two more games than Sporting. They're 2 points ahead. They're on 1.56 points per game. The Portland Timbers are on 41 points. They've played three more games than Sporting Kansas City. So they're at 1.46. And then that team we keep talking about, the Vancouver Whitecaps, they are 2 points behind Sporting Kansas City, but they're on the same number of games now. They're at 1.52 points per game. This still, Carter, would you say is, I would still put the top five teams in the Western Conference in the hunt to win the conference.
Which means FC Dallas is not in.
Yes.
According to those, if you're going with the top five, that means FC Dallas is out. So they've been free falling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you're right. Top five is pretty wide open, because Houston they've played 26 games, so might be a little bit tough for them. But Sporting really had to look at that week off and be happy with all those draws. A lot of 1-1s and a lot of draws. And what that did was just kind of keep everyone right around Sporting, but wasted one of their games played. So I think they're going to be pretty happy. Just looking at the table, too, it's just pretty insane to look at the 19 in the goals allowed category for Sporting, and then the next best in the West is 33 goals allowed by Dallas. So a full, 14 better? That's pretty insane to look at right now.
And the team that everybody is saying is the best team, I don't think it's even really much of a matter of opinion, at least in the regular season. Toronto FC is the best team in MLS this year.
Yeah, they're over 2 points a game right now, yeah.
Some people are saying vying for the greatest team in the history of the league. They've allowed 26 goals. That's the second fewest. Now, their offense, their attack is just out of this world, but Sporting Kansas City have allowed seven fewer goals than Toronto FC. So you're right. It does stand out quite a bit. And I think that's where you make the case. To me, if there's a team to knock off Toronto in the postseason, I would hold up Sporting Kansas City as that team, because the one thing that you could envision happening is just trying to grind out a result against that team, limiting their offense. And we saw Sporting Kansas City go up to Toronto. Now, Jozy Altidore only came off the bench in that game. Both teams were not at full strength, but you could envision an MLS Cup final in the freezing cold in Toronto once again being an ugly match. And if there's a team, we're getting way ahead of ourselves. Yep. But I'm seeing a lot of people crowning Toronto FC as just, let's just give them MLS Cup now. I think we also know it just doesn't work that way necessarily every time. And I would say if there is one team out there for me, especially if you get to MLS Cup, it's a one-off. I'll take the team that's allowed a record-setting possibly number of goals allowed this year.
Yeah, I think they have to be feeling pretty confident. Like you said, though, still a ways off. I mean, nine games left. And you asked me last week about doing the math, which I'm usually pretty bad at.
Mm-hmm.
But, what the points per game means is Sporting has the highest, possible points left in the West. They have the highest possible points total.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they know that with nine games left, if they do the job, they'll be having that one seed. And so in order to get to MLS Cup, having those games at home would be huge. And that's been the stated goal since the beginning of the year, hasn't it? That they need to get at least one home playoff game, get back in Kansas City, because they think they can get those wheels rolling at home. Maybe that'll lead to a nice run throughout the rest of the Western Conference playoffs.
Well, if you do the math on it, 1.6 points per game over the next nine games, because Sporting Kansas City are at 1.6 points per game right now, right? So if you do that over the next nine games, it's basically 14. It'd be 14.4 more points. That's not possible. So that would be either 14 or 15 points, depending on how they handle it. So you're looking, if they maintain their pace the rest of the year, at 54 to 55 points to finish out the season. Is that good enough to win the Western Conference? It appears in this year's version of the Western Conference? It appears so, because this conference is just beating up on one another, game in and game out. By the way, Toronto's already on 56 points. So that would not even catch Toronto by the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's how good Toronto have been so far this year. We'll see if Sporting Kansas City can maintain that pace as well, though, because I think one of the things that we will talk about is, okay, now you had a week off that you didn't want, right?
Yeah.
You were healthy. Everything was lined up, actually, to go to Houston and be ready to play a game on the road at full strength.
Against a Houston team that had played midweek as well.
Yeah. It was actually set up perfectly for Sporting Kansas City. They got a week off they didn't want or need. Now that means they got a Wednesday game next week, then a Sunday game, then a Saturday game, then a Wednesday game the week after that, then a Sunday and Saturday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, Sunday. And one of those Wednesday games is obviously the U.S. Open Cup final. But now three midweek games on the home stretch for Sporting Kansas City, which we know that stresses the roster. That's going to make things difficult for Sporting Kansas City.
It is. That's going to be a really tight, packed September of games there. We're going to have to see some rotation, I think. And it's like you said, the team's been pretty full strength. We've seen the last couple of years there's been some injuries down the stretch. And so right now I think they will feel pretty good in terms of that, in terms of how it's been over the past couple of years. They lost Cameron Porter. But other than that, doing pretty well. And we look at the last couple of years, there are starting to be some injuries around this stage of the season. So it's nice to have a pretty full-strength roster at the ready. And, you know, we've seen these attacking players rotate through, and each of those guys has their own qualities. And I think we're going to have to see each of them come through big down this stretch for Sporting to get those points that they need to claw over the finish line.
Yeah, and one thing we can also say that we've learned is things can still change quickly in this league. One bad stretch, like we've seen from FC Dallas, puts you below the red line all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And they've fallen apart. And another team that looked like the darlings of the Eastern Conference, the Chicago Fire, now they're still in the playoffs in fourth place in the East, but they have fallen on hard times as well in a major way. And all of a sudden, they're not in great shape either. So things can change. Teams get hot, teams get cold. We saw Seattle do it last year, go on a run down the stretch and, you know, make it all the way to winning an MLS Cup. So much still to be determined in the months of September and October. Love this time of year.
Yeah.
Love this time of year. The weather's better. I think you get better quality of soccer when the weather is better. And plus, the games just all mean so much. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll take a break. When we come back, we plan to be joined by Taylor Twellman, who's going to be calling us from, I don't know if he's in New York or not, we'll find out. But he is with ESPN, and ESPN is going to be on the call of the game on Friday. We will be back after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Big couple of matches coming up for the United States men's national team. It starts on Friday, 5:30 Central Time, when the United States men's national team at Red Bull Arena will take on Costa Rica. The game will be on ESPN, and on that note, we are very pleased to be joined by Taylor Twellman. You can follow him, of course, on Twitter. You should follow him on Twitter, at Taylor Twellman. Good evening, Taylor. How are you?
Good. What's going on, brother?
We are we're kind of trying to figure out what to do with our hands here in Kansas City, because we've, like, 2.5 weeks without a game, with the game getting canceled last weekend. So we're jonesing for some soccer this weekend.
Yeah, I get that. You guys are on a roll as well, so I understand it. But I can't wait to be there for an Open Cup final, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun. And you'll get to see the New York Red Bulls against Sporting Kansas City. We'll talk about that later, because you're going to be at Red Bull Arena coming up on Friday. And I was reading, Taylor, an article from Grant Wall today, which I hadn't realized this. He basically laid it out that In all of the 100 years of United States soccer, never has there been a game that was really for something, with the A team playing for something tangible or important in the New York metropolitan area until this game. That's a stunning fact to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually, when ESPN and U.S. Soccer made the announcement of the World Cup qualifier being at Red Bull Arena, that was actually my 2.5-3 minutes on halftime of that game that week in MLS, is because when you watch the Gold Cup previously this year, where Costa Rica played at Red Bull Arena, it was a pro-Costa Rica crowd.
Yeah.
There's a reason why the United States hasn't played in the metropolitan area of New York, because 99 out of 100 times, it's an away game.
Yeah.
I heard Bruce Arena today during the press conference, and he says we have a home field advantage 100%, that he disagrees with everyone like myself. I'll believe it when I see it. You know, this is a very unknown situation where the United States hasn't been in a long, long time, where you can go into a World Cup qualifier questioning whether or not it's a home field crowd. Now, do I expect that it's 80-20 United States, Costa Rican? Yes. But am I going to be shocked if it's 50-50? No. And until we see it Friday night at 6:30 on ESPN, this is the conversation that needs to be had. And Grant Wall did a very good job of articulating why, what, where, when New York has played a part in the World Cup qualifiers.
That makes me nervous because this is a big game. Should I be nervous about that?
I am. So if I am, I would say, yeah, I do think you should be. And people will sit here and say, I can't believe we're having this discussion in 2017. Well, the reality is, where that stadium is at Red Bull Arena, we had a couple of our stats people at ESPN do some studies on it. It is the most condensed area of Costa Ricans in the United States of America.
Wow.
And you're putting a game right there. There is a reason that the United States hasn't played a meaningful World Cup qualifier in New York City because of that. So I would be nervous about it. On the other hand, I hope I'm wrong for the United States as an ex-national team player, but the reality is, whether the crowd's all Costa Rican or not, the United States has to find a way to get 3 points.
So what goes into making those decisions in terms of where the games are going to be played? Because last time around for the World Cup in Brazil, there weren't any on the East Coast. I think it was Seattle, Salt Lake, Denver, Columbus. I'm missing one there. But
you have one in Kansas City.
In Kansas City, of course, missing the home one. So what happens now that they bring a couple, Orlando and New York, over to the East Coast?
Part of that is, you know, I know a big part of it is Bruce Arena has a say in those games. And so when he took over those schedule, you know, that they had an idea, but Bruce has a say in that, just as Jurgen Klinsmann did before him and Bob Bradley did as well. So coaching staff has a big say in where those games want to be played and where they want to be played. And listen, when Red Bull Arena is packed, it's easily the best stadium in this country, but it's just not packed enough.
Mm-hmm.
So that is going to be a very interesting part of this, because tickets are already sold out. Now, who shows up is a big question mark, but it's not that convoluted when the United States choose where to play World Cup qualifiers, as the coaching staff has a big part of that, big say in that.
I think one of the things that Grant Wall pointed out in his article was the idea that with a lot of players coming from Europe for the United States, they wanted to make the travel easier for them, and flying straight in direct from New York, from whatever countries they're coming from. Do you think that's does that sound logic? Does that help out?
It's a massive part of it. It's a massive part of it, because the difficulty for a lot of these guys, and I think it's not said enough, is that if all those European-based players are flying to Seattle, Portland, or L.A. right now,
That's
a massive difference, guys.
Yeah.
Because they're landing Monday or Sunday night, depending on when their games are. You want to get time changed. The game's Friday. You're not preparing. You don't have more than a week. So that is a big part of being on the East Coast and allowing those players to acclimate themselves as quickly as possible. So that is a huge factor.
So one of the guys that's come from Europe to play in this is Christian Pulisic. We have to talk about him. It's appointment television for me every time Borussia Dortmund's on now, because he does things that you just want to watch. But he had a quote today that I wanted to ask you about, Taylor, as a former player. He said, everything happened a little bit too fast. The past year has been a roller coaster. And the reason that quote jumped out to me today was, I've been amazed. I've wanted to calm myself down. I think we all have, and not put too much hype and pressure on the kid. But he just keeps doing amazing things, so we can't help ourselves but get excited about it. And what's amazed me has been that he seems to do it with such ease. It doesn't seem like it's overwhelming to him. That's the first time I've heard or seen him say anything that indicated any amount of, gosh, this is a lot for me. In your mind, is it a lot for him? Is it a concern, or is he handling this as well as anybody could be expected?
I think he's handled it as well as anyone can expect it, and quite honestly, I think he's handled it better.
Yeah.
The fact that he's honest. I think if you asked Dembele, have things happened faster than he expected? I think he would tell you, well, yeah, I didn't expect to be sold to Barcelona 18 months after $50 million, now $154 million. So it's just, on the world stage, in the world market, it's part of the game. Whether you're 18, 24, 28, doesn't matter. If you're good enough, and for Pulisic, it's at 18 years of age, he's being honest. Yeah, it's gone fast. But the fact that Dembele is now sold, so now he's got more pressure on him at Dortmund. You know, everyone looks at the United States and we look at him, and so often we're looking for this quote-unquote Messi type of savior. But the reality is every single day Pulisic has that pressure on him now that Dembele's been sold from Dortmund to Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
So he's prepared for these World Cup qualifiers because his daily pressure in the daily trainings with Dortmund and that team, it's prepared him for these moments. It's unlike anything else that Clint Dempsey, Landon Donovan, and Tab Ramos and are great players before him. This is different because at 18 years of age, he's in it every single day for a Champions League team in Europe. It's unlike any other player has seen this young in our country, and that's why I think he's handled it better than anyone else.
So a lot of the attacking impetus will be on Pulisic, as it seems to be now. Like you said, he's inserted himself right in there. Were there any surprises on the roster with you for the games coming up this weekend?
No, it's a good question, but there's no surprises. Bruce was hired to qualify for the World Cup, so he's not going to make any changes or take any chances in the roster. I will say this, and this is a bigger topic discussion. It has less to do with Bruce Arena and more to do with the United States, is that at some point you have to take chances. Bruce Arena, after the 2006 World Cup disappointment, said it's a young man's game. We need to get younger. Well, here we are in 2017. How many of his players are that young? And so I ask this question to everyone regarding this topic, is that when the United States shows up at a World Cup, how many of their players, first-year World Cup players, are 28 and older?
Yeah.
And if the United States wants to compete against Belgium, Colombia, Argentina, Brazil, those teams in the round of 16s and further on, you cannot rely on 28 and older players being their first experience in a World Cup. And so when I look at these rosters, of course you're going to bring your 22, 23 players, but if you're going to name 26, at some point in these kinds of games, Weston McKennie type of player needs to be called in. He's 18 years of age. He's playing at Schalke. Like, those are the players. That is the Germany of the world. Germany in 06 called in an 18, 19, 20-year-old Schweinsteiger and Podolski. How'd that work out for him?
Yeah, pretty good.
Pretty well in the end.
So at some point, as a nation, we've got to get past the Graham Zuzis of the world, and we're here in Kansas City talking about this. Graham Zuzi needs to be 23 in his first World Cup, not 26, 27. Matt Beisler needs to be 28 for his second World Cup, not his first one.
Right.
If you do that, think of the experience and what you gain. So then when you do play Belgium in the round of 16, it's not your first rodeo. That is the only way the United States is going to be able to compete. And quite honestly, Bruce Arena started the discussion in 06. But to answer your question, there's no surprises. Bruce can't take any chances, but I would have had no problem if 24, 25, 26 were some young players that maybe he was looking at for 8 to 9 months after this.
So this takes us in a different direction, but I love the conversation, Taylor. This is why we love having you on. That's what excited me about the U-20 team that we saw make at least a decent run into the World Cup, is I looked up and down that roster, including, you know, our guy Eric Palmer Brown here, and I saw a bunch of guys that are already full-fledged professionals, almost all of them. And that's what I feel like, that's where it's got to go, right? Those guys need to start getting some. Do you think those guys will start getting some appearances at some point in the relatively near future?
Yeah, I mean, if it was me and if I was at all part of the decision-making, a big majority of that under-20 team would have been a part of the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
And yet, for whatever reason, we sit here. First off, let me complete that thought, though. The under-20s, the only thing when people evaluate the under-20s that bothers me a little bit is everyone forgets it's 20s playing against 20s.
Right.
There's no men out there.
Right.
So you always have to temper your – you always have to make sure you – say that. So while everyone's going guns blazing about Tyler Adams, for example, the Tyler Adams we've seen in Major League Soccer this year, he's had some growing pains. I'm not saying Tyler Adams is going to be a bad player, but we sit there and evaluate Tyler Adams and say, look at a great World Cup he had. Well, mind you, that's his age group. But why all the criticism that we gave, that everyone gave Jurgen Klinsmann, and yet the Gold Cup comes around and we applaud Bruce Arena for bringing a veteran-type team. Let me ask you guys something. Would you have been, if he took the under-20s and a bunch of players nobody had seen yet, and they lose in the semifinal or quarterfinal, does it matter?
No, that's exactly.
And yet everyone that criticized Jurgen will say, well, no, it doesn't matter. But then when it happens, they all write, well, that's a disgrace. You should be fired or whatnot. I really struggled this past summer at the over-exaggeration of this Gold Cup.
Well, especially since this Gold Cup really didn't mean anything. I mean, it wasn't even for a Confederations Cup.
Well, it's
Cup
for
spot,
the playoff
it?
Spot, and oh, so well, that's okay. Where the debate happens. But to your point, if the whole goal in mind is to compete against Belgium, Colombia, Argentina in the round of 16, then you are 100% correct. Mm-hmm. Because that, it does not mean anything. And I am tired, personally, of evaluating against CONCACAF, because that's not our issue. That's not the issue. The issue is Tim Howard has to make 41 saves against Belgium. So where does that bar, where do we meet that? Where do we close that gap? How do we get that bar to come down closer to where the United States is? And I think at some point we've got to make better development decisions. I would have had 0.0 issue if Bruce Arena brought 7 of the 20s, and a bunch of MLS guys, Dom Dwyer, Kellen Rowe, guys we didn't see, and guess what? The group stage is over. I'm not bringing in Michael Bradley. I'm not bringing in Josie. I'm not bringing in Clint. I don't need to know. I don't need to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this catch-22, I feel like, in this world that we live in, when we evaluate and criticize, and rightfully so. I'm not saying you don't criticize Jurgen, but then all of a sudden Bruce takes over, and we're taking the safe road. I don't know. And it's not Bruce's fault. That Bruce's coach. He can do what he wants. He's not the technical director of U.S. Soccer. But that's where this conversation needs to go. We sit here and say, well, are there any surprises on the roster? There can't be any surprises. They have to qualify for the World Cup. But you guys are going to call me this time next year, and we're going to evaluate the World Cup. You tell me, are we ready for that World Cup any different than we were for Brazil? The answer is no.
Yeah, probably not.
The answer is no. If anyone tries to tell me yes, then get out of here. It's not. It's going to be the exact same thing we just did.
Well,
and you're going to bring down a bunch of first-year players, first World Cup players that are going to be a little deer in headlights. You're going to get a result. You're going to get out of your group. You're going to go around to 16, and it's going to be, as Yogi Berra said, deja vu all over again.
So how do we address that in the future? And I'm particularly scared, and you talk about the measuring stick against CONCACAF that shouldn't be what we measure ourselves against. In the future, when the World Cup expands, qualification in CONCACAF is going to be pretty much a given. How will they challenge themselves? Is it stuff like the Copa America, trying to get involved in more tournaments like that? How will they challenge themselves? Or does it start maybe, like you're saying, in Russia? Does it start with playing or bringing a few younger guys next summer?
It's a great question, because I think that is literally the crux of the question regarding everything from Major League Soccer to U.S. Soccer Development Academies to everything in this country, pay to play, whatever you want to talk about. That really is the discussion, in my opinion, and I don't know when it starts, because here's an issue, and it's a huge curveball that no one's really talking about. The United States is one of the few countries that relies on friendlies against better opponents.
Yeah.
But after the 2018 World Cup, guys, Europe has their new point system where they're, when they play friendlies, they're actually, there are no friendlies. Those help them qualify for Euros.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So now the United States can't go over to Europe and say, we're going to play Netherlands, we're going to play France. They can't, because those teams are going to want to play meaningful friendlies. So it helps them in qualifying for the European Championships. So, and I've always said this, I still believe it. I think the best continent for the United States to prepare for a World Cup is South America.
Yeah,
it's ruthless. It's reckless. It's uncomfortable. It's the most difficult part of World Cup qualifying. So if you're asking me, I'd find a way as many times as I can to play those kinds of teams. And if it's their A or B team, I don't think it really matters. If you're going to play Chile and it's their B team, it's going to be a pretty damn good experience as opposed to playing Costa Rica, Panama, Honduras' B teams.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where we go from there. So all that being said, with some of the injuries defensively for the United States coming into this competition, do you think we will see Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi in one or both of these next two games?
I do, just because they're known commodities. They've been here before. They give Bruce Arena some stability in certain spots. You know, DeAndre Yedlin's injury and fitness, whatnot, where does he stand? Obviously, Matt Beisler with John Brooks being out, left-footed center back, experienced. He's been here before. So I'd be shocked if we don't see Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler, if not one of them, both of them in these games. But Costa Rica is an interesting game because the moment you lost to Mexico in Columbus, this became the most important World Cup qualifier and the most difficult. And everyone will say Azteca, but the reality is this, guys. Azteca, you're playing with house money.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one expects anything. So the fact that you got a point out of that now puts it all those marbles and all those eggs in this basket, and you cannot lose this game. I think a draw doesn't hurt you. Obviously, you want to win three. You want to get 3 points, but the reality is you have to get a point out of this. But this became the most difficult and most important World Cup qualifier the moment you lost to Mexico and Columbus. I'd be shocked if you don't see Matt Beisler or Graham Zusi or both of them in both games, but especially the one at home.
Final question for you about the U.S. before we move on. We'd like to ask you a couple things about MLS, too. How do you think psychologically the result down in Costa Rica, the absolute one-sided nature and just embarrassing nature of that game, how does that factor into this game this time around?
It's a good one. I don't think it does, in part because it led to Jurgen's firing. Jurgen was fired after that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost players in that locker room and players within the roster will look at it as a clean slate. So I don't think it really plays a factor in that. Listen, it's not the first time the United States went to Costa Rica and absolutely got it handed to them.
Yeah. Right.
And yet they come them back to the United States wins. So it's not the first time. But I just think Costa Rica poses an interesting kind of team because they're very comfortable playing five in the back, making it very compact, trying to play through the midfield. A guy like Pulisic, if Jordan Morris plays, where you're limited in space, how do you find the game? Jozy Altidore becomes extremely important in these kinds of games. And then nine out of ten times to the United States, it comes down to set pieces. But that's the kind of game this is going to be. But to answer your question, I don't think they're going into the game going, we got absolutely waxed 6, 7, 8 months ago in Costa Rica. I think it really is a clean slate for a lot of these players.
Well, I hope so, and I think you're right. I think we're all on the same page on that. So it's going to be a big one again. We'll be watching it on Friday night, 5:30 Central Time for the coverage on ESPN, the United States against Costa Rica. Now, a couple of questions quickly for you, Taylor, on the MLS side of things. Before we even get to the West, I'm hearing a lot of chatter about Toronto FC possibly being the best team in the history of the league. Are you buying into that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I am. Now, it's extremely difficult to compare anything from 96 to 2005 till now.
Right.
I think it's an apples-oranges discussion in the way MLS is growing. I think historically, whenever you try to have that conversation, you have to say that as a caveat. In saying that, over the last 3 years, Toronto's the best team I've ever seen. It is the deepest team and the most balanced team I've ever seen. Now, teams that can upset them in a playoff series have to be very good defensively. So now you guys are going to ask me, Sporting Kansas City, quite honestly, is the perfect team, but that wouldn't be till MLS Cup. That's a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
So Sporting Kansas City is the kind of team where in a one-off situation, your goalkeeper stands on his head. Defensively, you're extremely sound. You don't give up a lot. That's how you're going to beat Toronto. I just haven't seen it yet. I mean, Toronto can have an off night, and yet Giovinco's got two free kicks, and Josie puts one in, and you look at the scoreboard, it's 3-1. They didn't play that well Sunday night in Montreal. It did the game. And yet Montreal never looked threatening. And Toronto never looked uncomfortable. The Eastern Conference is Toronto's to lose. The Supporter Shield's Toronto's to lose. I think the only thing that's going to kill Toronto is if they win the Supporter Shield with four games to go and they lose all of that fire and that drive. I think it's going to be difficult, as in MLS has shown us historically that the teams that go into the playoffs playing big games, must-win games, are often the teams that end up winning.
And along those lines, you got Toronto in the East. Who do you think is in pole position to win the West in terms of the regular season? We've been talking in Kansas City all year about how important it is to get a home playoff game for Sporting. Who do you think will pip it to the post in terms of the West?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Sporting Kansas City isn't one of the top two seeds. I really would. Now, the only thing that may upset that is if FC Dallas, with their games in hand, all of a sudden go on this 5-6-game winning streak. But Dallas has fallen on their faces. They've done it every single year. August comes around, and for whatever reason, they can't figure it out. But they still have games in hand. And so that's the hardest thing when you guys ask me this, is August 29th. On the East, if Atlanta wins their 6 home games in 17 days in September, well, then Atlanta's the second seed and like 1 point off of Toronto. So the games in hand are so difficult to predict.
Yep.
But the way the season has gone and the way the team is built, I'd be shocked if Sporting Kansas City is in a top two seed. And who wins it? I think the West, like the East has been the last 4 or 5 years, really may come down to the last 2 weekends and is a crapshoot on who wins it.
Certainly going to be very interesting with 9 games to go. Taylor, thank you so much for the extended time. We really appreciate it. Have a great trip out to New York or New Jersey, and we'll see you here in Kansas City in less than a month.
Yeah, I can't wait. Open Cup final Wednesday, September 20th. I love doing it, and the fact that it's in Kansas City should be something special.
All right, that is Taylor Twellman. He is the best in the business. Back after this on the Sporting Kansas City Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Taylor Twellman for a lengthy, in-depth interview.
Yeah,
that was good. Good stuff.
Really interesting, as always. Interesting on the U.S. development track, too, for sure.
On that note, let's talk about Gianluca Busio, the 15-year-old.
Nicely done. That's you're a pro.
That's how we do it, young Charlie. That's how we do it here. So this does tie in perfectly to what Taylor Twellman was discussing with us, though, the development of young players in the United States and getting to the situations where other countries have been for a long time, which is young players coming up through academy systems, becoming pros at an early age and dedicating their lives to the sport of soccer. It's not something that has been the model for sports in the United States for a long time, but it's happening now. We've seen it to a certain extent with Eric Palmer Brown, and now even younger, 15 years old, Gianluca Busio signed to a club contract with Sporting Kansas City last week. We're going to play some sound bites from you here, and we'll start with Peter Vermes. Of course, everybody remembers the Freddie Adu experiment a couple of decades ago at even younger, but he went straight into basically an MLS team and was expected to be a star right away, which was always going to be unfair. We also know that these kids don't always pan out to be the stars they were meant to be. So Peter Vermes was asked about the system now that Gianluca Busio is going into signing as a young teenager, and he says he wishes those opportunities would have been around when he was a kid.
first of all, I'm jealous. When I was 16, I tried out for the New York Cosmos in the NASL. And if I would have been provided with this opportunity, I would have signed in a second. I think the difference today, as opposed to then, is the support that we have within a club to make sure that it's not just about soccer, but there's so many other things. His schooling, the fact that we have the Swope Park Rangers, where we can bridge the gap for a player as he's growing, and he can continue to not be under so much pressure to right away be the player at, you know, 15, 16 years old that everybody would expect him to be when he's 20. So we have that whole structure in place. But there's so much more to it. We just, again, the support system is completely different today. And that's why I think that players can do it, or young men like himself can do this, because you have the education piece still there, but he's going to be able to be in an environment every day that has, you know, everything. Whether it's Betsy, who does the welfare of our players and deal with, you know, his sort of his life outside of soccer. You have everything here that you need from a soccer perspective, and we move to the NTC. It's even going to be at another level. So I think if this is what you truly want to do, it's an easy decision at the end of the day. That's what I believe. And I think that he made a great decision for himself, because, as he said, he wanted to be a professional soccer player his whole life. Up until now, it's all he's ever dreamed of, and he's got this opportunity, and I think he couldn't have made a better choice. I really believe that.
And I do think that the infrastructure of support for young players gives them a chance to progress more naturally. So Gianluca Busio signs his contract, Carter. It doesn't mean he's going to be starting games for Sporting Kansas City in a couple of weeks from now. He's going to play with the academy team still. He's going to then progress naturally when his ability dictates it to Swope Park Rangers. If his ability dictates then that he is ready to play for Sporting Kansas City, he will make that jump. Instead of skipping five steps without having proven that he can do it, he's got a chance to naturally progress in that regard. If he turns out to be Christian Pulisic and he can play at 18 years old for a big club, he will prove that on the field. And I think that sets him in a better situation for success.
Yeah, and having the Swope Park Rangers helps as well, like you said, get a few games under his belt before perhaps getting that eventual call up. But it's I liked hearing Peter saying he would have been jealous of, or he is jealous of that, and wish that he had some of those opportunities afforded to him when he was younger. I think, you know, it's great if someone wants to hire you to play a sport at whatever age. I think if you're good enough and someone wants to pay you money to do that, you should be able to do it. So I think it's a pretty cool juxtaposition with football and basketball, where they have to go through a few little weird hula hoops. Yeah. Here he's clearly a bright talent, and he's been afforded this big time opportunity.
I think that's one of the things that you start selling to the youth of, you know, youth players too, is that, hey, there's no artificial rules limiting your ability to turn pro whenever you want. If you're good enough in this league, you can play.
And compound interest, man. I would use compound interest. I mean, if you make $50,000 as an 18-year-old, you know, as an 18-year-old, as opposed to paying that into college, you know,
put that in the bank.
Yeah,
let it grow. That's right. Well, let's listen to Busio, who's got an interesting life story. You know, I talked to his mom and sister quite a bit at the press conference last week. Really neat lady, his mom. Told me she grew up in the projects of the Bronx in New York City. Went to UNC Greensboro for college. That's where she met Gianluca's dad, who is from Italy. He makes socks. He works for a company that makes socks for a living. And he's actually doing that in a prison right now in San Luis Obispo, California. So that's why he wasn't at the press conference. But so that's where you get a kid from Greensboro, North Carolina, with the name of Gianluca Busio. They go back to Italy constantly. He's got a European passport. He talks about the timing of joining this team and the opportunity that he has now.
I feel like it's the best decision for me to keep on progressing as a soccer player, to get in with older guys, like in the pro players that do this for their job. For me to go in that makes me want it more, to see how they live, to see how they work every day and come in and out of training, to see how they live. And I can learn from that, and I feel like that can make me a lot better of a soccer player, and I can already have experience with them. And then when I get older, a couple years older, then I'm already on top of the game and I already know experience and stuff like that to become the best player I can be.
Now let's hear from the Academy Director, John Perry. He also spoke about the development of Busio in the last year and just how far he's come in the year that he's been in Kansas City.
He scores goals at every level. He came in the first couple weeks he was here. He went with our U14s to the showcase, scored. He's been with the 16s. He's played with the 18s. Every time he goes to the national team, he's scoring goals. So what we've tried to do is just continually sharpen him up technically. But as Peter said, he's extremely driven and very mature for his age. He's got a great soccer IQ, and I think he's ready for this next step.
You saw some of the goals, Carter, that he scored with the U.S. What was it, the U16s, I think, that he was with. Last week, we scored five goals in four games. And Peter talked about the fact that the United States has not really done a great job over the years of developing technically gifted attacking players, creative players, goal-scoring players. They've created good big center backs and goalkeepers and guys that will work hard, good athletes that run up and down the field. But obviously Christian Pulisic, I think, is the first one in this vein. But they're hoping that Busio can be another one of those type of players.
Yeah, and the technical aspect is what sticks out when you watch him. I had the fortune of calling the Generation Adidas Cup down mm-hmm. in Dallas this year, and that's a U17 tournament where likes of Real Madrid and Flamengo came in. And he was playing with the Sporting KC team, so he's playing up as a few of the kids were. But what stood out for him on the field was just the technical ability. And like you said, like there's the physical aspects have always been a trait with U.S. players, but that technical ability really stands out for this kid. And like you said, some of the goals that he scored were pretty good in that CONCACAF tournament. And he had a good showing out in Italy, I think, with the tournament as well earlier this season. So he's a bright prospect, not only for Sporting, but for the U.S., as he's getting a lot of run with a whole bunch of different U.S. youth national teams. So this is just a really exciting signing for Sporting KC's future, I think.
All right, Carter, as we wrap things up on the show here, we got about 4 minutes left. Let's get back to the United States versus Costa Rica. That's the game of the week, right? And I totally agreed with what Taylor Twellman said, which was from the moment that the United States lost to Mexico, this game at home against Costa Rica was the biggest game in the round of qualifying. So it's coming up. What do you want to see from Bruce Arena when it comes to the players on the field? Do you have any strong opinions there? And what do you expect in the game?
I think I don't really have any strong opinions. Like Taylor said, there isn't really any surprises on the roster. It's going to be the biggest question. Who's going to pair with Michael Bradley in midfield? I think the impetus and attack will be on Christian Pulisic. And he's got a couple guys, Altidore and Wood, around him that can get goals. I think we'll see Clint Dempsey as a super sub now, which he seemed to take to in the Gold Cup. I hope he continues agreeing with that role, because I think it's something that he could do in the World Cup potentially as well next summer. So hopefully that still is part of the plan. But this Costa Rica team, they're a handful, and I thought it was really interesting that it comes to light, you know, that the biggest population of Costa Ricans is in New York City. It makes sense. I remember the first game I went to was in Chicago against Honduras, and it was 75% Honduras fans, and that was 10 years ago. Hopefully we're at a stage now where it will be a U.S. backing, but that Taylor Twellman saying he's worried about it. I think that's something to keep an eye on too, don't you?
Certainly do. It makes me nervous for sure. But the reporting by Grant Wall says that the tickets sold quickly, that they expect it to be mostly United States fans. We will see. In terms of what I want to see, this is going to shock you. I want to see Matt Beisler at center back. I would have wanted to see Matt Beisler at center back even if John Brooks was here. Nobody thinks I am sane or rational when I say that, but I saw John Brooks have one of the worst games I've ever seen in a men's national team jersey against Costa Rica. I realized that was at Costa Rica. I realized he wasn't the only one, but I don't trust him. I want center backs that I can trust, particularly in games like this. Matt Beisler will be where he's supposed to be at pretty much every turn of the game, and he won't switch off. He doesn't have that elite size and athleticism that Brooks does, but I trust him, so I want to see him out there.
So it's between him Omar and Hedges, you would think. Maybe Tim Ream as well, if they go with the back four.
A lot of people think that...
Obviously, Jeff Cameron being the other one.
I want to see Beasler and Cameron or Beasler and Gonzalez. I actually personally think the best center back pairing in the United States is Beasler and Gonzalez together. They've always played well together. They've cranked out good results together when they play.
Would you shift Cameron into midfield or something, or are you doing that at the expense of Jeff Cameron?
Now, that's the tough part, leaving Jeff Cameron off the field, right?
Off the field, no.
Yeah, that's the tough part. So I don't know the answer to that. Then I think if you play a 4-2-3-1, it's who sits next to Bradley. Maybe you could play Cameron in that situation, let Bradley have a little more license to play box to box, or you put Acosta there. I trust Cameron more than Acosta. Pulisic up top. Is Fabian Johnson going to start on one of the wings?
That's a big question.
Bobby Wood on the other?
Injured for so long.
Maybe Morrison. I'd rather see Fabian Johnson than Morris if I can, but we'll see. All right, that's going to do it. We'll see what happens on Friday night.
Big weekend, yeah.
Big, big weekend. And our thanks to Taylor Twellman and Charlie for running the show. We'll see you next time on the Sporting Kansas City Show.